This is Speaking of Writers. I'm Steve Richards. The book is Democracy in Darkness, Secrecy and Transparency in the Age of Revolutions. The author is Caitlin Marie Carter. Does democracy die in darkness, as the saying suggests? This book reveals that modern democracy was born in secrecy, despite the widespread conviction that transparency was its very essence. In the years preceding the American and French Revolutions, state secrecy came to be seen as despotic, an instrument of monarchy. But as revolutionaries sought to fashion representative government, they faced a dilemma. In a context where gaining public trust seemed to demand transparency, was secrecy ever legitimate? Whether in Philadelphia or Paris, establishing popular sovereignty required navigating between an ideological imperative to eradicate secrets from the state and a practical need to limit transparency in government. Unveiling modern democracy's surprisingly shadowy origins, Carter reshapes our understanding of how government by and for the people emerged during the Age of Revolutions. Caitlin Marie Carter is assistant professor of history at the University of Notre Dame, makes her home in South Bend, Indiana. Happy to have Caitlin Marie Carter joined me now here on Speaking of Writers. Welcome to this program.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So why this book for you?
Well, this book came out of a long-held interest I had in the relationship between public opinion and representative government. I lived in D.C. for a few years before I went to graduate school to get my Ph.D. in history. And I was always interested in how our elected officials made decisions about their relationship to their constituents and to public opinion. And I was particularly interested in the press's and the media's role in shaping that relationship between constituents and elected officials. So I went all the way back to the birthplace of modern democracy, the late 18th century.
We've got secrecy, we've got transparency and publicity at play here. This book, Caitlin, proceeds in three parts. Talk about the three parts that you cover in this book.
Yeah, well, the first part really looks at the lead up to the outbreak of the American and then French revolutions. So it looks at kind of the Age of Enlightenment from the mid 18th century going into the 1780s. And it looks at this rising suspicion of state secrecy. And it ties this suspicion to a growing sense that representative government really should mean that people have a say in what their government does. And these two ideas get kind of tied together as discussions, well, an imperial crisis and then war for independence in the British context, and in France, discussions about reforms of the government. As these discussions emerge, there's this critique of state secrecy, and it's tied to this idea that representative government can be a tool of popular sovereignty. So you've got these ideas mounting. Part two looks at the revolutionary moment, and it looks at sort of the creation of the United States with the federal constitution and the early national government in the United States. And it looks at the outbreak of the French Revolution and the early revolution in France. And it looks at how these new governments that created the world's first representative democracies, it looks at how they address this question of what should be done in public versus when secrecy was okay in government. And it kind of talks about how transparency gets really instilled as a value in representative democracy, as something that's really essential to its functioning, despite the fact that in practice, a lot of times these politicians are deploying secrecy pretty strategically to shape representative government in a way that's a little bit less responsive to popular influence in the process. And then the book really wraps up in part three, looking at kind of the end of what I would call the revolutionary period. So in the US, it takes our story up to the election of 1800, putting Thomas Jefferson in office. And in France, it takes us up to the rise of Napoleon Bonaparte as emperor in France. And it kind of talks about how by that point, the meaning of transparency was really transformed through these revolutionary periods to be something a little bit more passive, to be more of a broadcast of information to the public that encouraged more of a passive form of citizenship as more spectatorship. And that over the course of that, it kind of traces how the meaning of democracy was changed into something that's a bit more passive than active. And it argues that the use of secrecy in government was key to doing that. And in the process, the meaning of transparency really changed from being an idea of promoting an active dialogue between citizens and their government to being one of more passive broadcasts that citizens as spectators sort of receive from their government.
What was Jefferson's feeling towards transparency?
Great question. Jefferson was long an advocate of transparency in government. So he was over in France when the Constitutional Convention was meeting in 1787. And his good friend Madison, who was in Philadelphia, you know, wrote him a letter and said, "I'm sorry, but I can't really tell you anything that we're doing. We've adopted these rules of secrecy to promote unbiased discussion here in our meetings." And Jefferson was really skeptical of this. He, you know, he wrote back later saying, "You know, I really think that this is a bad idea. It's better to have transparency in government." And he kind of advocated this through his early political career. He became a leader of the Democratic Republican faction in the 1790s, which really pushed for things like having active citizen participation and public opinion having a big influence in government. But he's one of these figures who's complicated because as he comes into office as president, he has a very conflicting relationship with transparency. In a lot of ways, he really works to very carefully guard the work of government and the executive branch, and particularly his private life, which he really aims to cordon off from his public persona.
There's a convergence here, too, between the Federalists in America and France.
Yes, absolutely. There's an interesting convergence that I highlight in the book where Federalists tended to be the party that was more openly theorizing a role for secrecy in representative government, seeing it as something that could be beneficial to promote wise legislation and good decisions, even if they weren't always the most popular decisions. And in France, you often had Jacobins who the Federalists, you know, decried as their avowed enemies. They really disliked Jacobins. But you actually had Jacobins coming into power during the period known as the Terror. And, you know, rhetorically, they commit to transparency. But in practice, they actually adopted secrecy in a lot of their work of government. And they came to advance a very similar idea to American Federalists that political representation operated best when elected officials could make wise decisions. And they sort of had this idea that those elected officials should help shape public opinion, that they often knew better than the people and that they should lead them rather than reflect their wishes. So you do have this kind of odd convergence between Federalists in the United States and Jacobins in France during the Terror.
Caitlin Marie Carter is my guest here on Speaking of Writers, Democracy in Darkness, Secrecy and Transparency in the Age of Revolutions is her new book. So what are the benefits, Caitlin, of secrecy in government?
Yeah, that's a great question. There are decided benefits that are possible. I say that while also emphasizing that there are, of course, dangers. And if we look at the Jacobin use of secrecy during the Terror in France, we could see some of the potential excesses and extremes of the use of secrecy in government. So I want to put that there to say that that is certainly true. And someone like James Madison, over the course of his career, came to see secrecy as more threatening to government by the people than less. But that said, I think the book does recover an important case for the utility of secrecy and sometimes insulating the government and slowing down the process of policymaking in certain cases to make it possible for the government to sometimes make decisions that are not the most popular, but may actually be the better policy decisions. So the book tries to recover the possibility that there can be positive uses for secrecy in a democracy and that it's not always a threat to democratic government.
So what happens to White House files when presidents leave office?
Oh, that's a great question. That's the guarantees and laws about that come out of a more modern context in the 20th century. But yeah, once presidents leave office, their files are turned over to the National Archives, where they're preserved for the future.
Let's fast forward to today and most items recently in the news. Of course, over the last year or so, we had President Biden with a number of classified documents that surfaced. And then last year, the classified files recovered by federal agents at Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence. There were also records found at former Vice President Mike Pence's Indiana home. So why do we care so much where these secrets ended up?
Yeah, I think we care so much because we expect that our elected officials are there to serve us, and that what they do in office should be a matter of public record. So that not only while they're in office, that we want to have a sense that we know what's happening and what they're doing, but also after they leave, and for the sense of posterity and the historical record, that we are able to have those materials and go back and establish records of what happened. I think it particularly disturbs us, and again, this is a long tradition in American history. I trace it back to the origins of the United States. We have a long tradition of suspicion in elected officials keeping secrets, and particularly keeping secrets for themselves, rather than having them belong to the state, right, and the government, which it, our idea is that that belongs to the people. So I think that there's a, I think those are probably some of the main reasons why these stories of classified documents being found in officials' homes was particularly alarming to people.
What was your research like for this book, Democracy in Darkness?
Yeah, my research for this book took me to a lot of different libraries and archives in France, in the UK, and also in the United States along the East Coast. I read a lot of government administrative records looking at people like clerks and how they regulated public access to early congressional meetings, for example, or the way that committee rooms were set up and whether they had locks on their doors, things like that. So I went from a lot of administrative sort of material like that, and then I read a lot of early newspapers and pamphlets where people had often pretty acrimonious debates about whether something could be legitimately kept a secret or not.
What surprised you the most when doing all that research?
I think what surprised me the most is that there was a real case made for the utility of closed door deliberations, and keeping secrets. I suppose I was a little bit less surprised at how many people, really advocated transparency as a basis for representative government. And I wasn't too surprised by that because that tends to be how we think about it today. I was a little more surprised when I came across so many of, the founding fathers like Washington or Madison, writing a little bit more openly about some of the ways in which closed door deliberations or keeping things behind the curtain, as Washington sometimes put it, how that could actually be beneficial or lead to good policy outcomes. And I suppose I found myself surprised sometimes seeing that side of the argument a little more clearly than I had going in.
And what would you like readers to take away from Democracy in Darkness?
I'd like people to think about how our idea about what democracy is, how it works, and our attitudes about transparency and secrecy in government, how these have a long history. And a lot of the debates that we currently have about these things, they don't come out of nowhere. And our connotations of secrecy, for example, those change over time. And they're really formed in relation to how we think about democracy and what we want democracy to mean and how we want it to work. So, if anything, I hope readers would take away that history is very important if we want to have a firmer grasp on some of the big challenges we're facing today.
The book is Democracy in Darkness, Secrecy and Transparency in the Age of Revolutions. The author is Caitlin Marie Carter. It is on Yale University Press. Caitlin, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
And this is Speaking of Writers.